public roadway. You know, your rights end at your driveway. You know, you don't have any rights in the street. And my answer to that is that if a man's house or a man's home is his castle, then his neighborhood is his kingdom. And you cannot sleep in your bed at night while anarchy reigns in the street. You know, if you've got bad people knocking on your door, then you've had a serious failure somewhere because they should have never gotten that far.
That's part of, like we were talking about, safety and security. In order to make sure you're safe in your home, you have to make sure your environment is secure.
Exactly.
Now, that can take many forms. That could be forming up like a neighborhood watch, which actually is a good idea if you have a neighborhood watch in your area, because then you get to network with all the other neighbors that you have and start to build that rapport like you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, it takes some effort to maintain that. We still in this neighborhood, across the 15 blocks that we've sort of included, we actually have an armed watch every night in two or three shifts, depending on who schedules. And that's not, to say that, that we march up and down the street with rifles, because we don't. You know, usually what happens is that, we drive around in the car, and, we go up and down the blocks, at 5 miles an hour, and we're just looking, and, most of the time there's nothing to look at because it's the middle of the night. The only interesting thing that ever really came out of that was that on 5 or 6 blocks down from me, there was a small house fire that had started late at night, and the watch actually caught it really early and managed to get everybody out of the house and, to get the fire department out right away. And, of course, he also knocked out the front glass and got the hose running on it. So he saved life and property, right? Well, that was worth it. That's worth the effort it takes to do that kind of thing. Of course, getting your neighbors to organize like that before something bad happens can be really hard, depending on your neighbors. If all your neighbors are liberal soccer moms, you could be in a lot of trouble.
A lot of them will be more concerned. It's like their attitude could be, well, what's it worth to me? Or what's it worth to my kids? They don't see the long-term benefits of it. They are looking for the immediate payoff.
Sure. Well, and in that case, I consider that an immediate payoff. We kept at least one house from burning completely down. That's worth, the $3 of gas I might spend every 2 weeks doing my patrol. In the end, it costs you very little, time-wise or money-wise, especially if you're in suburbia like I am. You must be more rural than I am.
I'm a couple miles outside of town. My neighbor, John, he grows produce, and he actually sells it at a stand up at the highway. My neighbor Jim, he's retired. He has a flea market booth that he operates on the weekends. He also repairs boats at his house. Stu and his wife are both retired. I've got a lot of retired people around me. And
that's always good because they have extra time on their hands.
Yeah, well, the area I'm in up until about 10 years ago was all agriculture. I mean, at the end of my street, I've still got a 30-acre field that used to have cattle on it just 5 years ago. and you go over one road, and there's a 300-acre lot that the guy raises horses, burros, and donkeys.
Yeah. That's I used to live rural and I liked it. It has benefits and drawbacks. course, your largest concern is being that close to the coast. What's the elevation on your house?
Well, according to my GPS, staying in my front yard, I am 1 foot above sea level.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm 12 foot above sea level, but I'm also behind levees. Of course, that doesn't do you a whole lot of good sometimes.
That's true. Now, you've been discussing, basically, number one, about the emotional wealth that you're trying to protect. The neighborhood, sense of neighborhood, to help protect after the, you know, a disaster would come through. Do you have any other further thoughts as you were talking about the strategy and the objective?
One of the analogies I use on the blog is the sinking of the Titanic. And when the boat sinks, you need to get in the lifeboat. And you need to get as many people in the lifeboat with you as you can. And once you've accomplished that, you need to row. And if you don't row, many hands will drag you down. And that's a pretty good analogy as far as the strategy goes, because what you're doing, when something bad happens, or as I've said it now, an opportunity arises, that means that the normal order has broken down. And the ultimate goal, the ultimate objective, is to put civilization back together. Because in the end, you know, I want to be able to, you know, I want to have power, and I want to have running water, and I want to have flush toilets, and I want to be able to sit here on my cordless phone with my electronic headset while I browse high-speed internet and talk to Mark on the phone. And, you know, the way I say it simply on the blog is I want my MTV.
Yeah.
And if you have, if in talking to a lot of survivalists, and now, you know, we don't say survivalism too much anymore. We say preparedness. But, okay, in your case, you know, your objective, your short-term objective is, all right, you're going to get your family out of Dodge. You're going to travel to the place that you have prepared. And you're going to set up camp. Okay, now what?
Well, actually, I have just recently purchased software to continue my children's education. We put in a garden plot at our family property. I'm trying to get duplicates of my tools, so in case I have to leave my tools here, I'll have a set of tools up there. I can do carpentry work, plumbing, masonry work, with concrete. I'm not too good on wiring, but I'm trying to make sure that afterwards, I have a way of, if I don't have a way of making money, I have a way of bartering for things that I need. Also continue my children's education. My mother and I are both ordained ministers, so we will also hold regular services because the religious portion, the spiritual side, is also very important. And we have friends and other family members who, if they show up, part of my job would be to help educate them. And we would basically, try to get ourselves back to a proper civilization, I guess you would say.
Okay. And just to think about that in the context of Katrina, what I saw was that even in places that were completely destroyed, St. Bernard Parish being an example, because the entire parish, which for everybody else in the country is a county. Okay, so we're going to imagine your county, wherever you are, and we're going to fill it until the highest point is under 12 feet of water. And we're going to leave it like that for 10 days or 2 weeks. And that's, I mean, it's easy to say, but it's very difficult to think about it until you've seen it, and I've seen it, because I go down into St. Bernard Parish quite often. And when I went into St. Bernard Parish the first time, I said, you know, I wouldn't come back here. I just wouldn't do it. You know, I'd find somewhere else to live. Lots of folks came back and put St. Bernard Parish back together. And, you know, the wisdom of that is questionable to my mind. But they did it. And I think that says something. I think the lesson in that is, and hold on a second, I'm going to cough. Sorry about that.
Not a problem. I always just take my headset and flip it up when I have to cough.
Yeah, I just hit the mute button. And the lesson in that is that no matter how bad things get, people are always going to try to put civilization back together again. And I never had a good understanding of that until after Katrina. And one of the reasons that we came back to New Orleans, because we were pretty set up in Houston. I could have stayed in Houston if I wanted to. But one of the reasons we came back is because a lot of the clients that I had were calling me and calling my boss, because, you know, we both still had our cell phones, and I kept my technology going, so I had websites up and I had emails for everybody. You know, within a few days after the storm, the question everybody was asking is, okay, when are you coming back to set us up? And that sort of struck me as like, you know, there's a whole lot of people that if I don't go help them, are probably not going to get help. And so that was one of the driving forces for us to come home. And my wife, being in mental health, sort of said the same thing. You know, hey, there's going to be a whole lot of crazy people that need services. You know, and since that's what I do, then that's where I ought to be. Well, you know, if I'm sitting in a cushy apartment in Houston, or if I'm sitting out in the middle of the woods in my camp, I'm not accomplishing that goal. I'm not helping. I'm surviving. Okay, you know, I'm doing it. I got the family. We're safe. We've managed to sustain all of our wealth, you know, but that's not moving forward. We've survived. Okay, well, we get the gold star. All right, well, now what? And the ultimate goal is to go home.
And I would say that would be an admirable goal also.
You know, and that's just... Yeah, I would say, you know, that's heroic and everything, but really, it's just what you do. You know, it's not, you know, after the storm, you know, after a lot of time went by, you know, and sitting there, you know, thinking about it after hours, you know, it's like, you know, man, we spent a lot of 12, 14, 16, 18-hour days, you know, putting stuff back together. We lost, you know, I'm in computer technology. We lost zero clients, you know, because we were prepared for that kind of eventuality. You know, every one of our clients has preparedness plan. They all have a disaster management plan because that's one of the things we do for them. You know, we saved their businesses because we rescued all of their critical data, you know, before the storm came in and destroyed it. And of course that takes a little bit of skill to put that together after the fact. But there we were doing it. And as many businesses come back online, you know, it's a chain reaction. You know, everybody needs a job. Because after we eat all of our food preps, then what? After we drink all the water and the filters are no more good, then what? After we run out of ammo, then what do we do? All right, well, we need to have some income, and whether that be, you know, because we've managed to do something that we can barter for, or that means we, you know, continue to manage our cash economy and, you know, we put the train back on the tracks and we keep going, we need to keep moving forward. And ultimately, we need to go home. And that's not just, I guess it's hard for me to articulate, but it's not enough for me to go home. Everybody has to go home. You know, after, at one point, you know, one of the my house was not that damaged. I only lost about half of it. I lost half the roof, and we had a lot of water on the inside on that side, but we didn't take rising water. And one of the pushes is after, once I finally got my roof repaired, which took me maybe 10 days, I had up to 7 families living here at any one time. You know, because their houses were completely gone. And then, you know, as we were able to do it, we put work crews together. We'd go work on somebody's house. We'd get another house livable. And, you know, we'd move somebody out. And we maintained that community, not just locally, but also across the area. And eventually, everybody went home.
And that became the goal.
Well, like I said, it's just sort of what you do. Now that I've done it, now that I understand that, I would do it much better next time. Okay, you know, and some of the hardcore folks online, you know, I've gotten some emails now, you know, on that kind of subject, and they're like, well, what do you do if the lights never come back on? It's like, well, you know, dude, if the lights never come back on, you've got much bigger problems than you can prep for. Because what do you do when your food runs out? Okay, I don't want to be a dirt farmer. I do not want to sit on a piece of property, no matter how pretty, for the rest of my life and feed my kids corn, bean, and squash. You know, it's just not me. I used to think I could do that, but really I can't. You know, to do the job that I do, I need a high-order civilization. I've got to have stable electric power, you know, and I've got to have people who need my services, you know. Does that mean that I can't be a farmer? Well, sure, I could be a farmer. It's just, it's not my life goal. And that's not to say that I'm interested in having a lot of money or having a lot of stuff. My grandfather taught me a lesson when I was a young man because he had his own business, you know, and he was fairly late in life, and he would go to work in the morning, and come 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon, he'd knock off and quit working. You know, I asked him one time, I don't know, maybe I was 10 or 12, I said, you know, if you worked harder, you know, you could make a lot more money. I said, you know, why don't you, you know, aren't you interested in, you know, getting a new car and having a better house, you know, having more stuff? And he looked at me and he says, you know, I can only sleep in one bed a night, I can only eat 3 meals a day, and I can only drive one car at a time. And that made perfect sense to me. But in that was also something, I guess, that he didn't say, which is that the emotional wealth of having his time off, you know, to spend with his family and with us grandkids was worth more to him than the money was. And so he was building a wealth of a different kind. And I guess it's sort of, we're coming on an hour and a half now, so I'm going to start to wrap it up.
Yeah, we got about 4 minutes left.
Okay. So, well, that's plenty. But, you know, hopefully I've either established or I've at least raised a doubt in your mind that emotional wealth is far more valuable to all of us than physical wealth, than things. And my question is, why aren't we prepping for that? And secondly, why aren't we living our lives like that? Well, you know, some of us are. You know, some of us, you know, yes, every now and then I wind up at work late. And lately that's been more frequent. But, you know, I'm also taking the kids to Disney World. We went, you know, we went last 3-4 months ago. You know, we go to the beach. We sit down, and at least once a month, we put something together and, you know, we go do something. We go buy the video game. We go to the zoo, to the park, to wherever. And we sort of nurture that emotional wealth. And we prep for it.
Okay. Well, thank you very, very much, sir. Hopefully sometime we can do this again.
Yeah, next time I'll try not to be so touchy-feely, and we'll talk about shooting looters or something.
Well, you raised a lot of very good, valid points, and I'd like your permission. I would like to cross-post this show over to the Alpha Rubicon website, if it's all right with you.
Sure thing. Okay. Go right ahead. And if anybody has missed the website, if you go to theplacewithnoname.com, it's linked right on the homepage.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Shane. I will send you an email a little bit, and we can start talking about the next show. I guess that you've raised a lot of very good, valid points, and a lot of things make me think about some other things. Thank you very much, sir. You have a good night. God bless to you and your family.
Thank you, Mark.
Yes, sir. Pardon?
Nope, I'm done.
Good night. Good night. That was Shane from The Place with No Name. The blog is Listening to Katrina. You can go to, like he said, his website, theplacewithnoname.com, and then you can go down there. He's got a direct link to his blog, Listening to Katrina, and he has a lot of good information. And the computer just told me I have 90 seconds left in the show, so I will go ahead and get on out of here. Good night, everybody. God bless. I will see you Sunday night for the Mother's Day show. Take care.
For my country, for the pain that it's been through, she's been made to suffer for the profit of a few. Storm clouds are out forming, winds of change now touch our shores.